Inconsistency has dogged the Edmonton Oilers for the last month. Indeed, since the team lost both Oscar Klefbom and Chris Russell to injury from its defensive core back then. Boy, it seems like a long time ago, doesn't it? With Klefbom yet to return, resulting in them sitting on the cusp of a wild card playoff berth in the NHL's Western Conference. And while the Oilers have been stuck in a win one or two, lose one or two type of rut as of late, at least the half dozen other teams also in the wild card hunt have been plagued by inconsistencies too. For now.
I'm Jim Matheson.
I'm Rob Tichkowski.
And I'm Craig Ellingson. I talked to these hockey beat writers for the Edmonton Journal and the Edmonton Sun about the continued sputtering by the Oilers, about talk of the team sending out serious feelers in the trade quest for a top line forward, and about the high number of shots they're giving up each game. This is the Oil Spills podcast for Tuesday, January 15th, 2019. So I want to throw out that game against Buffalo, the 7-2 win. I want to throw it out the window almost, at least the first half of the first period, as a statistical anomaly. You know, they had five goals between the two teams on 12 shots by the midway through the first period. Throw that away, and it's, you know, the Oilers still come out winners. But there was some, you know, there was some luck going on there, Koskinen stopping a lot of shots. What is your takeaway from that game last night? We're seeing, you know, a team come off losing a game they probably should have won or could have won on Saturday against Arizona. Then they come out against a Buffalo team that, you know, is above them in the standings. They're in the Eastern Conference, but they have a better record than the Oilers. What's your takeaway?
Just high fives and walk away with a 7-2 win. I mean, that's... Buffalo hasn't been playing very well now for the last 10 games. They started the season well, and they're moving back into the pack with as an average team. So, you know, they've given up lots of goals lately. So, could have been 3-3, or the Oilers could have been down 4-3 after the first period. You know, it was right around the league, there was some high scores last night, you know, 8-5 games, 7-4 games. So, it was one of those nights around the league where there's lots of goals scored, too. And if you're the coach, you're saying, geez, we played terrible defensively, but we still scored seven goals, and that doesn't happen very often. And you're not throwing out two goals from Zach Cassian and Milan Lucic very readily. You'll take those four goals and say thank you very much.
Was there a comet flying over top of the league or something? Or
yeah, that was
full moon?
One of those nights where everything went their way. They've had a lot of those go the opposite way, so you can't really complain about them getting lucky, because they're not. But they could have easily lost that game. In a 7-2 game, it's quite conceivable that they lost it. I mean, how many nights are you going to get two from Milan Lucic and two from Zach Cassian? You know, how many nights are you going to score on, you know, what was it, two of their first three shots? You know, it was just everything broke their way, which is fine. And it was a big win, and they needed it. But if you're looking at that game on film afterwards, they were badly outshot. And I'm thinking, you know, this isn't a sign that everything is headed in the right direction. It's a sign that everything broke their way on that one night. And if they play that same way against Vancouver, they'll get lit up, plain and simple.
Yeah, I mean, Hitchcock said that after the game. I mean, the fits and starts, you know, they're inconsistent. But that's been this team since their magical run at the beginning of Hitchcock's era, you know, ended, what, before Christmas. I mean, we've been talking this way for almost a month now.
15 years, actually.
Well, yeah, true enough. You know, well, you know, particularly in this, you know, these last couple of seasons, including, you know, last year and this year, the inconsistency is there. Fortunately for the Oilers, I guess, is that the people they're in the hunt with for that wild card spot, the last two spots in the Western Conference, there's that logjam of about five or six teams, and no one is seemingly gaining any traction and gaining ground yet. But here we are a few games before the All-Star break, and somebody's going to have to start, you know, winning more games and separating themselves. We still have half a season to go. Well, a little less than half a season to go. But this is kind of make or break time for the Oilers since they do have a big chunk of games at home.
And this, like all those teams stalling at the same time, all that did was let Arizona and St. Louis creep into the mix now. So now there's even more teams that are going to be involved in this sprint to the finish. And like you said, with the All-Star game coming up and the Oilers bye week coming up, they're going to be idle for, you know, 8 or 9 days there and watching all these teams move ahead of them in the standings. So when they come back from the bye week, they're probably going to be sitting in, you know, 12th place. And they're going to have to make a big charge. They might have a few games in hand, but they're going to have to start putting some streaks together because you've got 5-6 teams, maybe 7 in that mix. A couple are going to get hot and a couple are going to pull away. And if you're not one of those teams, then you know, you're in some deep trouble because playing 500 down the stretch is, it's kept you around up until this point because everybody's kind of been weak, but somebody's going to pull away. And if you're not one of those teams, then you're missing again.
And we'll see where the team's at next week when we talk on the podcast again. But, you know, what do you do when you have that chunk of time off? I mean, it's an anomaly in itself as well. Having that, you know, ulcer break, then your bye week. I mean, that's almost, it can be an advantage. Obviously, you have guys healing. You will probably maybe get Oscar Klefbom back right afterwards. But, you know, as we've seen coming off of breaks, I mean, mm-hmm. you have to get right back into it. I mean, you can practice all you want, you can work out all you want, but you know you're out of the line of fire, out of combat for a while, and there's going to be some rust.
Well, there's rust, but every team in the Pacific Division gets the same break, as far as I know.
At the same time. Oh, really?
The breaks I think come by division now, so everybody, so Anaheim will get in a break as well as Edmonton and Vancouver, but
Minnesota, Colorado, St. Louis
yeah. will be.
No.
So, and I think of all those teams in Dallas, you know, they won't get a break at it. Colorado seems like the kind of team that could put a bunch of wins together again. They've been hitting the skids, but they can score lots of goals. And if they get some secondary scoring for the best line in the league, I think they can pull away. But, you know, if you're a coach, I don't know what you stand behind the bench. You don't know what team you're going to see from night to night. And that's discouraging. It's tough to coach when you don't have a lot of trust in your team, never mind certain players, as to how they're going to play the game. And it's about time they beat the Canucks. I mean, the Canucks aren't that good, but they've handled the Oilers twice the last two times they played them. And haven't given up a lot of goals either. So, I think it's incumbent on the Oilers to beat Vancouver, especially if Elias Pettersson doesn't play. And he's a fantastic player, so I think it would be very nice if the Oilers could beat Vancouver before they have to play Calgary. You know, if they lose to Vancouver, then they got to play Calgary. You know, that could be back-to-back losses pretty easily, and then they're right back in the glue again. So,
yeah, I still don't know what this team is. Are they underachieving on those nights when they just look miserable, or are they overachieving on those nights when you know they score 7 goals and you know post these you know supposedly character victories? It's just hard to tell. And with mediocre teams, you get that a lot. Like you win one, you lose one. You win one, you lose one. And like we've said many many times, you can set your watch by that team. I went to the rink last night knowing for sure that they were going to have a strong game and win because the night before they were awful, which means going into Vancouver, they'll probably have another lackluster game and everybody will jump on them for being terrible. And then they'll come back from that and play a great one. So it's weird, but they play their best when they're slightly embarrassed and angry and they play their worst when they're just the slightest bit of reason to be complacent.
And they play better against the better teams. I mean, they've played really well against Calgary this year.
Mm-hmm.
And Calgary, even when Calgary was, you know, clicking on all cylinders, the Oilers still beat them the last time they played them, 1-0, I think. And so when they lost a good game in Calgary, more of a high-scoring game, but they've played Calgary well. So I don't know I have no idea, like Rob says, which team. And now the games are starting to get more. They're not losing the games 3-2 very often. They're losing them by 4 goals, and they're winning them by 4 goals. So there's, you know, the grinding it out as Ken Hitchcock wants to see it from the team to win these games doesn't seem to be there. Certainly not, you know, depending on what day of the week it is.
Are there not enough experience in the lineup or not enough veterans in the lineup? I mean, having that, you know, state of mind where you're like, okay, we won a game, but we can't let the foot off the gas sort of thing. going into her next game, preventing those fits and starts.
I think they're missing that. You know, they have the top end of the roster. Their top four guys are elite level. They can compete with just about anybody. You know, maybe Draisaitl is not as consistent as some of the other elite players in the league, but their top four, plenty good enough. And then below that, though, they have a lot of fourth line players. A whole bunch of, you know, and they're good, hardworking fourth line guys, but fourth line guys are fourth line guys. You're not going to, in today's NHL, you're not going to win with that, because teams are three lines deep now. Good teams have three lines that can score, and the Oilers have one and a third line that can score. So that there is the issue. Guys like Reeder and Spooner that you were sort of halfway, and, you know, I guess Lucic counting on to round out your top six and score you those, you know, 10 to 20 goals, they're not there. So they have four outstanding players and then a whole bunch of fourth line guys, and that's not a formula that's going to win.
Defense, they don't seem to know which defenseman to play. Klefbom will come back. They don't get the puck out of their end very easily. I mean, that hasn't changed for years. The puck spends far too much time in their end. It's not up the ice quickly enough.
Cycles last forever.
And, you know, it's not like it was a couple of years ago where you could time the number of when the team was going to score a goal, because the Oilers just couldn't get the puck out for 30 seconds. Klefbom will certainly help that, because I don't think Adam Larsson's played anywhere near as well without Klefbom. And then when Klefbom comes back, they can put Klefbom and Larsson back together. And then Nurse can go where he should probably be, is on the second pairing with whomever. I'm not sure if that's Chris Russell or somebody else. And then they can build from there. But when Klefbom comes back, then they can have nine defensemen. So that doesn't include Sekera. That's way too many defensemen. And having two defensemen sit. I mean, you know why they're carrying two extra defensemen? Because they don't have any forwards. You know, the forwards they've got aren't scoring goals, so they're carrying one extra forward and two extra defensemen. And most teams are going the other way. They don't carry eight defensemen. So I don't know what happens when Klefbom comes back. I guess I find it hard to believe they would send Caleb Jones back to the minors when he's one of their better defensemen. Just because they can. You know, so what? You know, he's proven he can play. So,
do you have some currency along your defensemen when it comes to the trade deadline?
Oh, yeah, at the trade deadline. I mean, but at the very you're damned least. If you do and damned if you don't. Everybody says you need lots of defensemen if you're going to be making the playoffs. And it helps to have lots of defensemen. Then you're going to trade a defenseman. But that's the only currency the Oilers have, is trading a defenseman for a forward. They get too many defensemen. They need a forward.
Teams that want an extra defenseman at the deadline are teams with their sights on a long playoff run, so they're not going to give you one of their really good forwards for a depth defenseman. I don't see Edmonton trading their way out of it unless it's the first-round pick and Jesse Puljujarvi, and that's high-risk stuff, because you have to win that trade, and to win that trade, you have to get something really good back. And I don't see a lot of teams offering Edmonton a really good young forward that has some term left on his nice contract in exchange for those two pieces.
I can't fathom. I mean, Peter Chiarelli has made some trades where you looked at it and says, oh, that doesn't look so good. I can't fathom he would give up his first round draft choice for the rental crop right now. Mm-hmm. There's no star rental out there now. There's players whose contracts are up, whether you're Wayne Simmonds or Derek Brassard or Zuccarello or Ferland, or, you know, running down a list of a whole pile of them. But first-round draft choices for a lot of those players are, you know, in some cases already over 30. I just don't see it. For a goalie, perhaps, if you needed a goalie, and a team had another goalie, you'd say, yeah, like they did with Dwayne Rolison back in the day where they had no goalie. And you gave up a first-round pick, and Rolly was great. But I just don't. Of that whole crop, I mean, I'd like Wayne Simmonds the best. I think if you could get Wayne Simmonds for not a first-round draft choice, I'd take him in a heartbeat. I think he plays the game hard, and if he's a rental, he's a rental, but he gets you into the playoffs.
You know, going back, circling back to defense, I mean, no one's going to the playoffs if they're giving up that many shots per game like we saw against Buffalo. You have to have Mikko Koskinen make some impressive stops.
They get outshot every game.
Yep. Well, that's
badly,
that's it.
In a lot of cases. I mean, yeah. How many times can you win a game 7-2 and your goalie is the third star? I mean, you won 7-2. Usually the goalie's an afterthought.
Yeah.
You don't even need one when you win 7-2. You're thinking, yeah, okay, we outshot the other team 45-20. We didn't even need a goalie. It's the other way around. So, I...
That's the backhanded slap when you win 7-2.
Your goalie's the third star. And he rightfully so.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he made a bunch of saves.
He made a bunch of really good saves in the first half of the game, for sure.
I mean, we don't know what it would have been like if Klefbom had been injured, if Sekera, say, was here all season. And you'd like to think that that was worth, you know, probably a couple more wins, if not more, on the Oilers' record. And maybe they're solidly in a wild card position at the very least. If they have a healthy defense. I mean, a team like Calgary has enjoyed injury-free season for the most part, you know, and they're on top of the conference. I'm not saying Edmonton is the Calgary Flames, but injuries are obviously playing a factor here, and we're not going to know, of course. But, you know, quality of defense, I guess it goes with the quality of the players in the roster, because when you're, you know, Darnell Nurse, as much as he's been playing a lot of minutes and he's actually been scoring points, I don't think if you had your full roster, he's in your top pairing.
Yeah, well, it's, you don't like to make excuses, but you can draw a straight line between when, you know, they were 8-2-1, Klefbom got hurt, and they lost six straight. So, I mean, there is a straight line between where they are now and what happened then. So, I don't know if it's just Oscar Klefbom or Paul Coffey that's out of the lineup. It just it made a pretty significant difference. And like I always say, like, your number one defenseman is the engine of the team. It's the, like, the shaft in your driver. If it's not working, and if you don't have a good one, it messes everything up. So we saw with Vegas, like, they got off to that kind of mediocre start, and then they got what's his name back from the suspension, and immediately they kicked in, and they're running away with things now. They're one of those top three teams. So you have to have your number one defenseman going and have him, you know, playing well and healthy, and when you lose him, it hurts. If that's the magic elixir and he comes back and they're back to where they were before he got hurt, then I would be amazed. But, you know, it's well, I guess we'll have to wait
it's
and
the
see.
Old, when he's not there, all of a sudden he becomes like a Norris Trophy candidate. Yeah. You know, when he's on the team last year, they're saying, man, Klefbom's playing bad. And then, you know, of course, he had a bad shoulder all year. So it's a backhanded slap too at the rest of the defensemen when you lose Klefbom for a month and you can't win a game. And then you're saying to yourself, well, we do have lots of defensemen here, and we should still have enough NHL. They do have enough NHL defensemen. It's not like they've got four guys from Bakersfield playing in their six or seven, so I don't know.
Yeah. Well, when you lose your best defenseman, all your other defensemen become worse, because your number two is now a number one playing above his head. Your three is a two playing above his head. Your four is a three. So everybody is playing more minutes and more responsibility against tougher opposition, and they get exposed because there's not a bunch of depth. So, that's where we're at. Theoretically, if Klefbom comes back, and assuming that he hits the ground running, right, he's been away for a long time. His hand's all messed up. So we'll see how good he is when he comes back. But sounds like they need him.
And you guys were just talking about this a couple of minutes ago, but circling back to the idea that the Oilers are, you know, in the market, they're, you know, some of the talk yesterday on Twitter and whatnot was that, you know, all the scouts, all the staff is out at all points scouting for a forward for the Oilers to acquire, you know, and on offer would be a young, developing forward who we have to think might be Jesse Puljujärvi. But, you know, like you've already said, the timing is odd to do it now before the trade deadline. That's the summertime stuff.
You're dealing from a position of weakness again. The whole league knows you need a forward. And then you're going to trade the fourth overall draft pick who isn't exactly lighting it up. And what are you going to get for him? You need, if you're going to trade Puljujärvi, you need him to be playing a little bit better in terms of putting up stats before the other teams say, oh, this guy's a... And the only team that can look at him and say is Carolina and say, well, we'll just play him with Aho because they used to be line mates in junior. and we'll get them going. But that's the only team where you could, where you might be able to trade him to and say, well, it doesn't matter what his stats are because they're looking at a pairing of two former junior line mates. But I don't know. It's they'd had forwards. Now they're looking for forwards.
Well, I mean,
they just spin in their wheels. They had forwards. Now they're looking for forwards.
Well, and it just dawned on them now that they need some scoring. I could have told them that in November 1st that you needed to be, you know, sending your scouts out across the league looking for some wingers that could put the puck in the net, because that was been a problem heading into the summer. We saw it. Like, okay, are you sure that you're going to put all your eggs in Puljujarvi and Yamamoto? Because, you know, I'm not sure that's going to work. Oh, guess what? It didn't work. And here we are in, you know, middle of January. You know what? I think we need some forwards, you know. Jesus.
Well, if they weren't up against the cap, they could have tried to get Jeff Skinner.
Yeah. Yeah.
He would look pretty good, 30 goals. Playing with either Dreisaitl or McDavid, he'd look pretty good on this team.
Well, it's so, a case in my mind of the GM trading quarters for nickels, or in Jordan Eberle's case, a quarter for a nickel.
Yeah, when it comes to scoring. Trade twice, yeah, like that's tough.
Yeah. That's our Oil Spills podcast for today. You can listen to our show via iTunes, Google Play, and SoundCloud.